The Buddhas dwell in constant bliss, so for them there is no difference between good and bad. But from the viewpoint of the person making the offerings, there is a considerable difference. Therefore, to offer something inferior and then to visualize that it is the best one undermines the act of offering and destroys the merit involved.
Even if the motivation, substance, and nature of the offerings are faultless, things can still go wrong when the manner of making the offerings is mistaken. This is illustrated by the following anecdote from the life of Arya Nagarjuna. Nagarjuna had received his ordination from Saraha and was given the name of Bhikkhu Sri. Saraha foresaw that Krishna was about to be struck by famine, and therefore he appointed Bhikkhu Sri as the food manager of Nalanda Monastery, which we can see the ruins in India not far from Bodh Gaya, the place of the Mahayana Buddha. He, Saraha, then returned to South India and entered into a retreat on Glory Mountain. The famine struck soon after his departure. It continued for 12 long years. Weak people gradually died off and the strong moved away to other lands. The district thus became almost completely uninhabited. Bhikkhu Sri, however, had previously mastered the occult art of alchemy and possessed the ability to turn ordinary metals into gold. Therefore, he put his art to use and transformed several pieces of iron into copper and into gold. He then used his gold to buy grain and other foodstuffs from the nearby areas not affected by the famine. One day, a group of pandits, or realized monks, very scholarly monks, came to him and asked, "How have you managed to supply the Sangha with food when the rest of the area is afflicted so heavily by famine?" Bhikkhu Sri answered them truthfully. The pandits rebuked him, "You have manufactured gold without asking or informing the Sangha. Indeed, you have caused the monks to live by means of wrong livelihood." They then expelled him from the monastery and ordered him as a penance to build a million temples in Stupa. Thus, even though his motivation was pure and his aim only to bring comfort and well-being to the Sangha, the manner of making the offerings was in contradiction to the rule of monastic discipline. For monks are not allowed to indulge in exotic and diverse activities such as alchemy when residing in the monastery. Thus, the manner of making the offerings was inappropriate. Therefore, what it's saying is, even if our motivation is good, even if our offering is excellent, the means by what we attain, the means by how we attain the actual offering should also be pure, should be also clean, which I stressed earlier. As for the offering vessels to be used, the best are made from gold or silver. Medium quality vessels are made from brass or copper. The simplest are made from clay or wood. The quality of the vessels does not matter, although it is said to be important to use the best that one can afford. Whether or not the offering is small or large is of little concern, so long as the mind of the practitioner is not dominated by worldly considerations. The smallest offerings made with the purest heart surpasses a large offering made with purity. The practice of making daily offerings generates the merit that causes material prosperity to increase. Even in this life. I don't think I have to say that another time. I think that grabbed all of us. This does not mean that one should engage in a practice in order to become wealthy as an end in itself. We did not want to hear that one. One should have the Mahayana aspiration of wanting to improve one's merit in order to be of greater benefit to the world. The main emphasis should be a spirit of altruism. But if we are poor and can only afford to make very small offerings, we should do so daily, and soon we'll be in the position to increase the size and quality of the offerings due to the merit collected. Then we can skip that story down, because you can read that on your own, to the bottom of page 160, the last sentence. The Indian master, Acharya Ashvaghosha, who we had already consulted his scripture the other day, the 50 verses of Guru Devotion, Lamanga Jupa, an offering placed on one's altar becomes a constant offering to all the Buddhas. By that gift, great merit arises, and with merit, the supreme accomplishment is seen. With merit, we can advance in meditation. With merit, we can have more weapons in fighting delusions. With merit, we can lessen our negative karma. With merit, all temporal wishes such as work, health, long life, harmony, happiness, stability will come. With merit, one, when engages in meditation and practice, will gain the accomplishment. One will be able to actually achieve enlightenment. Without merit, without supplementary practices such as making offerings, one's meditation will become very slow, one's meditation will become very lazy, and in fact, one may have the danger of abandoning in the future. With merit, everything can be accomplished. Everything. Just like when we go shopping in Star Hill, if you have a big bank account, you can buy a lot of things. If you have a small bank account, why don't you go window shopping like me? So, or you take someone along that has a big bank account and then make them buy it for you, but that's not very good. That's not very good. In any case, all kidding aside, if you have a big bank account of merit, then when you go shopping for attainment, you can buy everything. If you have a small bank account of merit, then when you go shopping for attainment, such as stability, harmony, long life, meditative stabilization, giving, generosity, love, and compassion, let alone look at the price tag, you won't even be able to touch it. You won't even be able to go near it. Merit is very important. How you acquire merit is how much you put into the supplementary practices, such as prostration, vajrasattva, making offerings, taking doing your prayers, and also serving your teachers, and also making offerings on the altar. That is how you can make merit. Along with that, then charitable practices also, such as giving to the poor, helping the sick, etc. But in order for it to accrue great amounts of merit, big amounts of merit, it must be motivated by bodhicitta, that by the power of these merits, may I become a fully enlightened being in order to skillfully and completely help me. If we do it to show off to our friends, if we do it to get names, if we do it to get a plaque, if we do it to get reputation, no merit. So, Ashvakosha says, an offering placed on one altar becomes a constant offering to all the Buddhas. By that gift, great merit arises, and with merit, the supreme accomplishment is soon achieved. Whenever you make an offering, imagine that the object to which the offering is made is a manifestation of the three jewels of refuge. Then the offering becomes a gift to all the Buddhas of the past, present, and future. By making offerings to all the Buddhas, we generate a tremendous force of meritorious energy. This in turn acts as a cause for us to meet with conditions conducive to the realization of Mahamudra or Supreme Siddhi. What's Mahamudra? The realization of emptiness, peace, all attainments. Just see that as all attainments, all right? Dzogchen. Please listen to that paragraph well. Let's go over that. Then the offerings, Okasa, whenever you make an offering, imagine that the object to which the offering is made is a manifestation of the three jewels of refuge. Then the offering becomes a gift to all the Buddhas of the past, present, and future. By making offerings to all the Buddhas of the past, present, and future, by making offerings to all the Buddhas, we generate a tremendous force of meritorious energy. By making offerings to all the Buddhas, we generate a tremendous force of meritorious energy. This, in turn, acts as a cause for us to meet with conditions conducive. This, in turn, acts as a cause for us to meet with conditions conducive to the realization of Mahamudra or Supreme Enlightenment. It creates the condition, it acts as a cause for us to meet with conducive conditions. In this case, conducive conditions means long life, health, wealth, harmony, a good place to stay, a good body, the Dharma, clean place, knowledge. All these items that we wish for in our life without having to dedicate toward, without thinking of, if we make offerings, will act as a cause automatically for us to meet the conducive conditions to practice the Dharma. So therefore, when you make offerings with a proper motivation, which is to become a fully enlightened being, it will automatically, by the power of the three jewels and your motivation combined, it will automatically create conditions conducive to your Dharma practice and realizations. Automatically. Therefore, when you make offerings, you should not make with the motivation of showing off, to get money, to get health, to get wealth. In your future life, you may be beautiful, be born as a queen, be born as a superstar, to be born as Naomi Campbell. You don't have to make motivations for that. You will get all the conditions you need to practice the Dharma automatically when you dedicate it toward enlightenment. Because to get enlightenment, you can't be hanging out in some gutter, sucking your thumb, and begging away with no eyes, stupid, unintelligent. That's not going to work. You definitely need a good body in this life and future lives. You definitely need a good place, a central area, Dharma, teachers, food, clothes, money, Mercedes. You need all of that. I need that. In any case, you will get that automatically if you make offerings
of the best and purest substances with the best and purest motivation from the means that you have made the offerings also pure. So the source pure, the offerings pure, the motivation pure, it will generate that kind of energy. Making offerings is extremely important. Do not think that it's just a small supplementary practices for small new beginning Dharma practitioners, and that you are so advanced and you are so great and you are so fabulous, you are beyond and you are above making offerings. Silly. Until the last moment of enlightenment, high bodhisattvas, they still make offerings. Kuan Yin is still making offerings to her guru, Amitabha. Still, if Kuan Yin is making offerings to her guru, what about silly us, Kuan Yin imposters? We still have to make a lot of offerings. We're a bunch of Kuan Yin imposters. So we should definitely try to emulate Kuan Yin and make offerings to the three jewels. It will generate the very conditions that we are all so much looking after. If we say to people, oh, make offerings so that you get enlightenment, one or two people will do it. Make offerings, you get rich, the place is packed. The place is packed usually, isn't it? If we make offerings to say, you know, your skin is going to be beautiful and fabulous and radiant and silky and white and all that, the place will be double packed, right? If we make offerings and say your golf game will be wonderful, double packed again, right? If you make offerings, definitely you get a Mercedes, wonderful. And if you make offerings and then you definitely get a wonderful, fabulous, beautiful girlfriend that looks like Cindy Crawford, the place will be triple packed, right? When we say for enlightenment, we go, oh, okay, since Guru told me to, I better do it that way. No, you have to understand, when you make offerings for enlightenment, all the causes and conditions to gain enlightenment will be accomplished effortlessly and without any need to even focus on it. Is that understood? Is that clear? So one does not have to make offerings thinking, oh, long life, oh, in front of our friends at the Dharma Center, we make, oh, may I gain enlightenment, may I gain enlightenment, may I gain bodhicitta, may I benefit all beings. Inside we're thinking car, girlfriend, relationship, health, long life, may my hair have less white hairs, may I get my appointment for my nails, BMW or Mercedes. We don't have, inside we're thinking that, really we're thinking that, most of us. That fabulous diamond ring, or what am I going to get for my Chinese New Year's for my wife, my husband? Don't think like that. You don't have to. From the inside, you should actually think, oh, I want to become a fully enlightened being. In order to become a fully enlightened being, I will generate the merits of making pure offerings, the best offerings that I can to the three jewels, in order to create the conditions that I can become a fully enlightened being. And automatically, one will be driving a Mercedes to the Dharma Center. One will be the sponsors of Dharma Centers. One will be the sponsors of statues. One will have long life and fabulous hair and beautiful nails, real nails. One will have all of that as a result of doing offering. It may sound silly and ridiculous. It may sound funny and ridiculous. Actually, if we think about it, yes. Now, very, very carefully if we think about it, whenever you make an offering, imagine that the objects which the offering is made is a manifestation of the three jewels of refuge. Then the offering becomes a gift to all the Buddhas of the past, present, and future. By making offerings to all the Buddhas, we generate a tremendous force of meritorious energy. This in turn acts as a cause for us to meet with conditions. This, okay, that's important. By making offerings to all the Buddhas, we generate a tremendous force of meritorious energy. This in turn acts as a cause for us to meet with conditions conducive to the realization of Mahamudra or Supreme Siddhi. What is Mahamudra or Supreme Siddhi? Enlightenment. This is the correct way to practice. Otherwise, just sitting cross-legged position on a meditation cushion and pretending to enter into deep samadhi, deep meditation until shamatha, meditative serenity with vipassana, higher insight, does not give birth to a state of consciousness free from the dominating forces of karma and delusion. It is just a big Chinese opera. Unless our spiritual conviction is deeply rooted and our meritorious energy made strong, there will be little spiritual progress. A fruit tree requires a firm root if it is to grow and produce well. When the root is healthy and free from the defects, the branch and leaves will grow without any difficulties. Then, when there are healthy branches, the trees will naturally produce healthy fruit. And what is that healthy root? The bodhisattva motivation. Bodhisattva is the being who has bodhicitta. So one should familiarize oneself with these Buddhist terms, and they are Sanskrit, they are not Tibetan. That is a language spoken by our holy enlightened Buddha. Bodhisattva, or you say in Chinese, Pursa, isn't it? Pursa is I think that's it. Bodhisattva. So bodhisattva, we say in Tibetan, is Jangchu Senpa. Jangchu Senpa, one who has bodhicitta. Bodhisattva is one who has bodhicitta. Bodhicitta is the state of mind that wishes to free all other beings from suffering, illusion and delusion, and to take them to full enlightenment. Having that type of mind, we are a bodhisattva. Generating that type of mind artificially and trying to gain it, we are a bodhisattva in training. We may think that that mind is great and that mind is wonderful and fabulous. It is great, it is wonderful, fabulous. Just to think about having a bodhisattva mind and wishing to have it, to have a bodhicitta mind, to have bodhicitta, just to wish for it and act upon it and do something about it, create great waves of merit before you even actually achieve it. Wishing for it will actually, and praying and acting upon it, one will actually achieve it. So even thinking about bodhicitta, wishing for it, hearing about it, knowing about it is a supreme medicine for all our ills, ills of the mind. Therefore, when one even hears about it, knows about it, acts upon it, it is great merits. So one day when we act upon it, when we strive toward it, and we keep working toward it, definitely we'll become a real bodhisattva with a real bodhicitta. At this stage, it's artificial. But then, everything we do in the beginning is artificial, even in ordinary walks of life. Everything is artificial. When we want to become a singer, we pretend we're a singer, we visualize we're a singer, we look in the mirror, we hold on to some object or a statue and pretend it's a microphone and think about it and think about our hair waving back and forth, the lights, the audience, people clapping, and we're in our own little reverie. Eventually, when we practice, we keep doing, we can become a singer. Even in ordinary ways, it happens like that. So right now, we should train to be a bodhisattva. We should train to be a bodhisattva warrior. The path of the bodhisattva warrior. The path of the bodhisattva warrior is the one that fights with weapons and armor. The armor of patience. The armor of diligence. The armor of enthusiasm. The six paramitas. With the weapon of wisdom, mental stabilization, insight. And the enemy we're fighting are the three delusions. The greatest enemies that will ever manifest in the world. The greatest. So, the path of a bodhisattva warrior is a supreme warrior, is the best. And one should take bodhicitta, or the enlightened mind, as the highest path, is the supreme path, is the one thing that you must gain. You must gain. So every single meditational practice, every single offering, everything that you do should be based on the wish to achieve bodhicitta. When one achieves bodhicitta, everything else becomes spontaneous and easy. Practice becomes easy. Obstacles become destroyed. Harm from above and below are annihilated. It is by the power of bodhicitta that at the final moment of enlightenment, when Buddha, when the Maras, when the demons and spirits, inner and outer, manifested in front of Buddha in the form of armies, spirits, beautiful women to seduce him, all of that when it manifested in front of him, Buddha could meditate on compassion and love immediately. And the vicious weapons that were thrown, and the darts, the fiery weapons and spears that were thrown at him, turned into flowers immediately and cascaded him, because he has achieved bodhicitta. Based on bodhicitta, all that can be accomplished. It is the best protection, bodhicitta. It is the actual object that we should try to achieve, bodhicitta. With that, we can get to enlightenment very quick. A one that has bodhicitta or trained in bodhicitta will be loved by others, will be cared for by others, will be considered by others. When one has bodhicitta, one thinks about others, and one trains about thinking about others, and helping others, and assisting others. Therefore, without having to ask for it, others will help us spontaneously. Others will love us spontaneously. Others will want to crowd around us. Others would want our attention. Others will want to be around us. Others will always flock around us and be near us. The reason is because that person is always thinking about others, and it's rare to find such a person that thinks about other people all the time. Is very common to find someone who thinks about themselves. Look in the mirror. Every time we look in the mirror, we see someone that is only concerned with themselves. It's nothing special. But someone who is concerned about others and wishes to do things for others and helps others and assists others and is kind to others, then that is someone very special. That is a bodhisattva warrior. That is someone that we all flock around, we want to be around, we want to be near. Because we know that that person's motivation is excellent, we know that person's motivation is pure, and we know that that person is striving to do their practices for us, to become an enlightened being, in fact, for us, not even for themselves, not even just to get out of samsara, but in fact to get out for us. That is a bodhisattva warrior. That is a state of mind that we should try to achieve. And for that reason, we should make offerings. For that reason, we should do meditations. For that reason, we should do dharma, practice, read dharma. For that reason, we should make mandala offerings. For that reason, we should, recite mantras and do meditations on dharanji. For that reason, we should serve our gurus with our body, speech, and mind, outer and inner. For that reason, we should follow the dharma. No other reason. So therefore, dharma practice should equal getting closer to achieving bodhicitta or becoming a bodhisattva, which will lead to Buddhahood. That is the purpose of practicing Buddhism. That is the purpose of practicing dharma. That is the purpose of engaging in dharma, doing any dharma actions. That is the purpose, the sole purpose, and the only purpose. Any other purpose besides that is not dharma practice. It is a show. It will, in fact, become an obstacle to your dharma practice in increasing your delusions. How, if you set up an altar to show it off to your friends, you're increasing your attachments, your delusions, your desire. So even setting up an altar becomes a negative act. So one should set up an altar and try to cultivate a positive act. One should try to do that. So if one does prostrations so that one can get skinny and lose weight, that's not a dharma practice. That's not a dharma practice at all. If one does prostrations for the sake of purifying negative karma, becoming an enlightened being, one will achieve that and one will lose weight without even thinking about it. One will automatically gain those without thinking about it. So one should not be tricky with the Buddhas and think, okay, I'm doing this for enlightenment. In the back of my mind, I'm getting skinny. No, don't even trick the Buddhas. They're not stupid, you know. So make sure one's motivation is pure and not to have side motivations on the back thinking, oh, it's in the back of my brain where no one knows where it is. Don't think Buddha and your gurus are so stupid. If they're so stupid, you'd be on the altar, they'd pray to you. They're not stupid, they have omniscience. Definitely. So I know those. I know from morning to night our motivations, most of us, negative thoughts and unhappy thoughts and these kind of frustrated thoughts come easily and come down to us like monsoon rain during rainy season. It's like rain during the monsoons, just spontaneously comes by habit without even helping it, without even thinking about it, all these negative thoughts come. That is habit, that is conditioning from hundreds and hundreds of years. How many lifetimes have we done that negative action? So it will come very easily, won't it? So we should, in fact, have compassion and forgive ourselves. Right? So next time we punch somebody, oh, compassion for myself. No, not that stupid kind of compassion. Next time we argue with someone, shout at someone, oh, compassion for myself. You know, I've been in samsara for a long time, so I'm allowed. No, that's ridiculous. You do have to fight. You have to do it. You have to try it. Be compassionate means try, and try. But if you don't succeed immediately, have compassion and know that you've been in this state for a long time and it will take some time to come out. It will be not that quick and that fast. It will plant seeds for you to come out of it, definitely. It will start the motions for you to get out of it, definitely. There's no doubt. The amount of time, the success rate will be your practice, your effort. It will be all up to you. So if you put complete effort and practice into it, you can expect the full results. If you put half-hearted, you get half-hearted results. If you don't put any effort and you just do the motions, dharma, making offerings, making some money to the monks, dhanas, and then having a beautiful mala that costs 15,000 ringgits and running around to temples, offering jastics. If you do all the motions of dharma, if you examine after 15, 20, 30 years, you're still in the same situation. Still in the same situation. So one should make an effort toward the dharma, as have I already discussed. Then, this is very important. The offering ritual is very simple. The motivation behind it is very important. Without knowing the motivation, what's the use of doing that? What is the use? Just another automatic act because you've been told to do it, or because everybody's doing it, or because it's nice to do it, or just because you have nothing else to do. You should actually know why you are doing it. This... In the same way, in order for our practices to carry us to enlightenment, it is important that we maintain the correct order and structure. Each meditation session should be initiated with the 6 preliminaries, which we have discussed already, then follow the main body of the session. Finally, we should conclude with dedication of meritorious energy. Always dedicate your energy. Always dedicate the merits toward enlightenment. Why? Although you make a good motivation, although you make a fabulous motivation, and the act is fabulous and wonderful, motivated by a good motivation, but if you don't dedicate it and you just leave it like that, it is like leaving a drop of water out in the hot sun. Why? Because usually we are motivated by desire and anger and hatred. So the next time we become angry and we shout and we yell and we show harm to other people, that anger will be the very basis of burning up our merits. So any good merits that we do, we must control our angers and we must dedicate it. If we do not control the angers, then the acts that we have produced, or the good things we have done, have been burned up and has been no effort at all. That is not a joke. Anger is the most destructive force toward our spiritual enlightenment and our spiritual merits. Spiritual merit. As I have already told you, I have a very hot temper, not based on hate, but I have a hot temper, and my teachers have told me many times, you're back to square one, and I go, oh. And when you think about that, it's true. Because whatever good merits that day you do, the minute you show your anger, even if you don't shout and scream inside you're boiling, you're burning up your merits. So what's the use of doing religious acts, or want to do religious acts, motivated or followed or preceded by anger? If it is preceded by anger, or acts of anger, or if it is finished with anger, or acts of anger, or if it's done with anger, or acts of anger, there is no use in doing the act. So it is not the act that is wrong, it is our anger that is wrong. It is not I that is evil, it is my anger that is evil. In fact, we should pull out that anger, meditate again and again on its disbenefits and the harm that it brings, and try to root it out from its source. And then we will really be a happy person. Then we will really be a person that people will like and enjoy to be around. And even if you're a very angersome person, if you start reducing your anger slowly, week by week by week, month by month, people are not stupid. People around you will notice and they will flock to you. And they will, in fact, respect you more because you were such an angersome person. And then later you become such a wonderful person, a peaceful and beneficial person. People respect you more because they see discipline, because they see sincere practice, and they see a person who has really done it. I know of a very nice monk in the monastery who's very soft and very gentle, and he's quite older, 35, 36, who studies, who meditates and teaches all day long. Much better than me, a wonderful monk. And one of his friends, and I always complimented this monk to my other friend monk and said to him, oh, this monk is very sweet and very wonderful, and I really admire him. I wish I can be more like him. Whatever happens, he never has any anger. Whatever happens, he forgives the person. Whatever happens, he's always soft and he always teaches. And even people have harmed him, when they come to him, he will forgive them and he will teach them Dharma. And that is the supreme gift. And I was complimenting this monk to my other monk friend. My other monk friend says, yeah, I respect him too. I said, yeah. He says, but I respect him more because he wasn't like that before. And I was saying, what? He says, yes, 8-9 years ago, this monk was at another monastery before he joined ours. And he was not like that. He was very angersome. He was very violent. He was very rude. He had a big mouth and he fought and he scratched and he punched and kicked and he held grudges. He was like that. And when he entered our monastery and started studying the scriptures, every year his disposition changed to the point now that you will never ever associate him with even the word anger. And I, upon hearing that, have gained even more respect for this monk. He is not my personal friend. I've met him a few times, but I know he's very poor. Hearing that, in fact, I have collected a certain amount of my angpaos in order to send to this monk because he's very poor, to do his gishi offerings, his graduation offerings. Anyway, out of respect for his practice and the inspiration he has given me, I respect him even more because he was that type of person. He wasn't born gentle and kind and soft. He was born angersome. He was born vicious. He was born with a big mouth. He was born vicious and mean of speech. And he hurt a lot of people and he damaged a lot of people. But with Dharma, after 8-9 years, he had gradually changed. And upon hearing that, I realized the power of Dharma. And I respect him even more because he was that person and he has changed. So therefore, if we practice this, if we practice this, we can become like that wonderful monk. And people and our friends and everyone around us will like us and respect us even more so. And the second benefit, the real benefit, is you save all your karma. You save all your good merits. All your good merits will be preserved. So two ways to preserve your good merits. One is to dedicate it toward enlightenment. So right after you do anything positive, teachings, listening to Dharma, meditations, offerings, immediately dedicate it not to long life, health, and all those silly little things, but to full enlightenment of all sentient beings and yourself. Therefore, you take that drop and you add it to the ocean. Until the ocean dries up, your drop will not dry. That ocean is Buddha, is Buddhahood. So if we dedicate it toward that, it will never be burned up. So in order not to destroy our roots of merit and all the good things that we have done, all the good things we have done, we should reduce anger. We should calm ourselves down. And when we feel it rising, don't make a big spectacle and don't make a big show and say, I'm that type of person. But in fact, calm ourselves down. And don't show off our practices. And think about the benefits. And think about the benefits of reducing anger and becoming a more gentle and compassionate person. And just in ordinary human ways, as an ordinary human, as we get older and mature and we become softer and gentler, it is something that everyone in the world praises. The older we get, the more wrathful we get, the more fierce we become, the more nagging, the bigger our mouth becomes. It is not an object of respect for anyone, even in the ordinary world. So in the ordinary world, if we reduce our mouth, if we reduce our actions, if we reduce our mind and our physical negative activities, we are respected in the ordinary world without having to even think about that. Automatically. And therefore, it will contribute to more harmony and happiness for us, more peace for our neighbors and for our mates, for our friends. It will contribute peace to everywhere we go. So it is a worthwhile thing not to develop anger, because it will destroy your meditations. It will destroy your roots of merit. That's why it mentions in the text here that it is very important to dedicate it to accomplishing Buddhahood. It is very, very important.